It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
This is curious, very interesting here. Looking through the stack of email questions sent my way this week, there's one that came up a bunch of different times having to do with Hebrew study. So I'm going to address that in a way that's practical for everybody, as well as take up a whole bunch of controversial issues and take your calls as well. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. You've got questions, we will do our best to get you answers and serve as a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church in compromise. You can email me directly at Dr. Brown, Dr. Brown, at askdrbrown.org. And I want to play some clips for you as well before I get into the heart of the email questions this week. But I want to give you further insight on what happened with the ruling overturning the will of the people, overturning the constitutional amendment in California by Judge Walker, saying that same-sex marriage is really the same as heterosexual marriage, or we should just say marriage, period, because that's what it's always been, is heterosexual. We need to understand a little bit more of what went on in the court, so you could see how much this is basically predetermined. This is the way this case was going to go, and attorneys who were working on it told me many months in advance how we should expect this thing to go. The judge just was guilty of more shenanigans, you could say, and turned the courtroom at times into, or attempted to turn it into, a circus. So here's a report from CitizenLink. Stuart Shepard is interviewing Ron Prentice, who is the volunteer chairman of ProtectMarriage.com, on the decision striking down the state's marriage amendment. Judge Walker has said that same-sex couples can marry beginning August 18th unless the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals puts a stay on that. You say, oh, no, it's got to put a stay. Look, these things are grievous, but human beings sin every day. Human beings do wrong things every day. We do our best to have righteous laws and to, as believers, be a moral conscience in the society and call on our society to do what's right and help participate in our society doing what's right. But the idea that, oh no, if more people sin, we've got to somehow stop that. We can't stop people from sinning, okay? And yes, two people coming together saying they're married is sin. Two people living together outside of marriage, two same-sex people coming together. But that's, God is not flipping out right now and worried. He remains on the throne. We should have an attitude of worship, adoration, confidence in him while we are grieved and while, above all, we're praying for God's mercy to be poured out on homosexual men and women in America, that the love of God would be revealed to them. Before I play these clips for you, when I was flying to Italy, I had a long talk with a gentleman next to me who is openly gay. Within moments of our conversation, he mentioned how he was going to be meeting his partner in Rome. And he had decided many years ago that he would be open and proud about who he is. And as we talked, he understood exactly where I stood on issues and was so glad to meet what he called a religious conservative with a heart. And we interacted on lots of things and appreciated one another sharing perspectives. And he clearly understood the gospel message for me. I shared my testimony with him at length. And as he talked about being rejected by his own family, and after reaching out to reconcile with his family, basically never hearing from them until right before his mother died, and then never up until his father's death, I felt the pain. I was teary-eyed as he told me this. And as he was sleeping, I was up for most of the flight. I just began to pray for him. And before we got off the plane, I told him that I was really praying that the love of the Father, the love of the Heavenly Father, would flood his life And he said, of course, I don't have that same revelation that you do, but he appreciated those sentiments. So above all, friends, we are praying for the love of God with a spirit of transformation and repentance and salvation and mercy to be poured out on homosexual men and women over America, over the world, but in particular in our nation. So just a little bit of insight in terms of some of the craziness that took place again. Stuart Shepherd with CitizenLink, a ministry of focus on the family, interviewing Ron Prentice, volunteer chairman of ProtectMarriage.com.
The decision by District Judge Von Walker was really no surprise, given all the shenanigans that went on before and during the trial. Help us remember what went on while the trial was going on.
Well, even before the trial started, the pretrial hearings that involved Judge Walker giving us orders to turn over all of our internal documents, all of our emails, everything that took place, our survey, our research, our strategic planning, everything was supposed to be turned over. And we fought that at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And there were a number of orders that took place, even up to at the time of the trial. Judge Walker wanted to bring cameras into the courtroom and televise it for the first time ever in a federal courtroom, and thought that this issue, this case, would be the best model to test cameras in the courtroom. Unfortunately, it scared off a number of our witnesses, Stuart. Those that had been part of depositions and we had planned on using were unwilling to go on camera, and it wasn't until 3 days into the trial that the U.S. Supreme Court had to rule against having televising the courtroom trial.
And it's your impression that that was part of his intent in wanting to put cameras in there, was to intimidate witnesses.
Well, in hindsight, there's a tremendous amount of things that we can say. By virtue of Judge Walker's decision, he was bent on overthrowing Proposition 8 and making some incredulous claims about same-sex couples, and that there are nothing but similarities between same-sex couples and heterosexual couples. And so there are a number of things that Judge Walker has put into his opinion that contradict everything that we were able to debunk during cross-examination. And so it will be very interesting to see how the Ninth Circuit and ultimately the U.S. Supreme Court rules based on the summary brief that we submit with a lot of quotes from our own cross-examination.
There's more. We might play a little bit more for you. But remember, you have lived to see the day here in America where a federal judge basically says that gender is an insignificant issue in marriage. That gender doesn't matter. Hence the need for us to wake up from our slumber and stand up for what's right, and learn the importance of gender within the body, within the church, within our own families. And who are we to throw stones at others when there's so much moral corruption in our own midst? Talking to this homosexual gentleman on the plane, he said he's just so happy when he hears about another scandal like Ted Haggard or something like that. And I said, why? He goes, well, all the hypocrisy. I said, listen, man, we have lost our moral stature, our moral authority, our ability to speak to these situations. And I don't blame you for mocking them. And, you know, when we have no-fault divorce in the church, come on, how are we going to speak effectively against same-sex marriage? Repentance needs to begin with us. When it begins with us, it will sweep into the society, and I'm confident that God is at work. Okay, a bill wrote in a few days ago, Dr. Brown mentioned a gay acceptance scale that is being taught in schools. For example, tolerant was on the negative side of the scale. There were four negative and four positive parts of the scale. Can you provide me with the info from the complete scale and the source from which you obtained it? I would be glad to do that. It is called the Riddle Homophobia Scale, put together by Dr. Dorothy Riddle. It's recommended for students in high school and above. Here are the four homophobic levels of attitude. Number one, repulsion. Number two, pity. Number three, tolerance. Number four, acceptance. Yes, tolerance and acceptance are considered homophobic now. Under positive attitudes, support, admiration, appreciation, and nurturance. I kid you not. This is all documented in detail in my forthcoming book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, which every one of you will need to own when it's out. But right now, go to truetolerance.org. I'll put the link up on our website. Go to truetolerance.org, and you'll get this info about the schools and a whole lot more. Okay, back with your questions. We're going to talk about the Hebrew language when we return. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, glad to be with you, taking your questions on a wide variety of subjects. So, you got something on your mind, something you want to dispute with me that we've talked about, some end time issue, we've been talking about that recently, some other perspective, stand we've taken that you've got a different take on, that's just great. We get some very interesting, challenging emails from folks, and I often invite them, hey, give us a call. Dealing with racial issues as well. Hey, love to hear from you, man. Let's talk about these things. Someone wanted to argue that all the Old Testament and New Testament believers were black. Hey, let's discuss these issues and see what the scripture says. See if we both have a little truth on that. But anything that relates to any subject we cover at all on the Line of Fire, biblical question, theological question, something you've got on your mind, a church controversy, you don't have to mention details and names, but the issues, by all means, we want to discuss. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so I mentioned, I was just curious, that I got a bunch of questions about Hebrew that came to me this week. One gentleman, Freddie, I'm looking for ways to practice my Hebrew. I want to be an Old Testament studies professor. And I'm wondering what helpful things you did when you were studying Hebrew in school. And then Tom noticed when I shared my testimony earlier in the week that I said that the Hebrew dictionary in the back of Strong's Concordance is very unreliable. And, yeah, Deborah also wanted to know if this dictionary in the back of Strong's is unreliable, what to do. And another person looking for it, wondering if I've want to teach a class in Hebrew. That was Anthony, and I think one more. Anyway, so let me address these. With any language study, a little a lot is, excuse me, is the best practice. A little a lot. In other words, you want to keep working at something. You want to keep it in front of you. You want to read it as often as you can, and to the extent you don't rely on translation and make it really hard on yourself and work at it, and then look up the translation after, you will learn much better. It's slower, it's harder, but you'll learn much better. A mistake I made when I was studying in college, because I didn't start studying Hebrew seriously until I was in college, a mistake I made was that I started studying too many other languages at the same time. I studied Hebrew throughout my years in college, but I also studied Arabic. That was fine. Had a couple years of Arabic. I also studied German because I wanted to be able to read scholarly literature in German. I took French very briefly, but it was conversational, and I didn't really have a use for that. I just needed to read it. I studied that very briefly and then dropped out. I took Yiddish, which is related to German, but filled with Jewish expressions and Hebrew usage as well, because I wanted to be able to read and understand better the language of my people outside of Hebrew, in Europe, especially throughout Europe, in centuries past. And then I also took Greek, of course. I want to learn New Testament Greek. And I also took Latin. So at one point I was studying six languages at the same time in college, and then of course went on to grad school and studied mainly languages. So it's a mistake to try to spread yourself too thin, or to just do an intensive, I'm going to study this all 40 hours 1 week. The best thing to do is stay with it a little, a lot. Now, what's the problem with the Hebrew dictionary in the back of Strong's Concordance? One thing is, it's not really meant to be a dictionary. It is primarily meant to be a list of all of the different words, or all the different ways that a Hebrew word or other parts of it, a Greek word, how they're translated in the King James. So it's not really a dictionary. But then, based on the scholarship of the day, there's some speculation. Well, it's from a root that originally had thus and such a meaning. And a lot of it is speculation, and a lot of it is not valid. Question is, how do you know if it's 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 or 1 in 6? I remember after sharing this many years ago, teaching in a Bible school in Long Island, that the secretary for the administrator of the school said to me, she was just reading in Strong's, reading Psalm 37 in verse 4, delight yourself in the Lord. So she went to see what the Hebrew word for delight was. And according to Strong's, its base meaning was to be effeminate. So you get kind of crazy stuff like that. Okay. So what you want to do is get just a good Hebrew English dictionary. And I've got it listed on the website, a concise Hebrew and Aramaic lexicon, which is William Holiday translating from a much more major German one. And it's not that expensive. You can spend $150 and get a really nice, or $200, a really nice two-volume set, but it's going to be very detailed. It's going to be very technical. It's going to make reference to lots of other languages. Or you can get some software. You got to pay for it. I mean, it's not cheap, but there's some really excellent software. I'm going to put the link of what I believe is the number one software to use that's user-friendly, that will get you multiple translations and just with a click tell you what the Hebrew is, what the Greek is, and refer you to the major dictionaries right there with a click. And it's reliable and it's excellent to use and it's easy to use. So I'll have those links on the website for you. There's a lot of stuff that's accessible. As for me teaching a course in Hebrew, I do some advanced classes. For example, at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, I teach a class last year on exegesis of the prophets, this year on exegesis of poetry and wisdom books. But as far as teaching an introductory course or something like that, no, it's not what I feel inclined to do, nor do I have time to do it, nor do I think I can do that in some way that's superior to what others are doing. There's software available just for even the most basic study, where you can, through software, teach yourself Biblical Hebrew, Biblical Greek, and at least get to a certain level where you're understanding how the language works and able to use the dictionaries intelligently. To really master the language and the literature, you're talking many years of serious study, if that's what God's calling you to do. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. Debbie in Franklin, Massachusetts, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
I got a question. When Yeshua HaMashiach HaBen Elohim, when he turned the water into wine,
mm-hmm.
Was that alcohol?
You bet.
It was real alcohol?
Sure.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Well, why wouldn't it have been? It was a wedding.
I thought it would be like grapes or something, fermented or something. Like, what do you
call
that?
No, the thing is, okay, just a few things. First, since we're just talking about Hebrew, let's sharpen up your Hebrew a little bit, okay?
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. His name would have been pronounced Yeshua, not Yahshua, okay? So I wasn't quite sure if you're saying that. But the right way to say Son of God is Ben HaElohim. Ben HaElohim. Right, you had a ha in front of the ben. Since we're just talking Hebrew, I correct that. Okay, yeah, very simply, the wine in that day was did not have the same fermentation or alcohol content of wine today.
Right.
But drinking wine in celebration, drinking wine at different settings was perfectly known and acceptable. And remember, they all thought that this was better wine than what they had started with. They weren't all going along with a joke. So we know that the Bible is absolutely against drunkenness and alcoholism.
Yeah.
But especially in that culture, drinking wine moderately or a celebration like that was totally appropriate. And there's no reason. I personally haven't had a drink since I've been saved for certain reasons and in our culture. But to say it was grape juice he turned it into, nah. All right. God bless. We'll be back with more. Joining us today, friends, on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I was just checking prices on BibleWorks software, which is, to me, the best software if you want to get into the original languages and user-friendly. It's about $350. I put a link up to christianbook.com. But if you're going to do serious study, you have to make serious investments. And trust me, when I started studying these things back in the 70s, not only were personal computers not around, but software like this was not around. So this gives you a tremendous jump forward, not so much to learn the language as much as to have access to the best scholarship on specific words, how they're used, what they mean. You might ask me if Paul wrote to Timothy and told him to drink a little wine for his stomach problems, not just drink water, and if Jesus turned water into wine, why don't I drink any alcoholic beverages myself? First, before I was saved, I only drank to get drunk. I didn't enjoy drinking. I did not enjoy the taste of alcohol. I had to drink enough to start to enjoy it, so I drank to get drunk. When I got saved, obviously, I quit drinking. I had no interest in drinking. Secondly, the church in which I was saved basically practiced total abstinence. It wasn't put down dogmatically, but that was the custom. And thirdly, I've been preaching and in ministry since early on and an example to others, for better or worse, hopefully for better. And I don't want to embolden anyone that struggles with alcohol to drink. Our culture is so saturated with a drink-to-decadence mentality, different than it is in other parts of the world. You know, and sitting in Italy, believers have wine, offer us wine, no thanks. I've never seen any of them get high or tipsy. But our culture has much more decadence attached to alcohol. So for me, it's as an example, I don't do it. And when students are in our school of ministry, from the time they're accepted to the time they graduate, even during breaks, we ask them to abstain. That being said, we understand, for example, in Messianic Jewish congregation, it might be appropriate to have wine in certain ceremonies and rites, and that people culturally may drink and never get drunk in their entire lives. We don't judge that. That's between them and God. But this is what I've practiced, and just a standard, a discipline that we have in our school. And we've done it, and if it's that big a deal to someone that they can't give it up to come and study and be trained in a place like Fire, our feeling is they're not ready for it. They're not serious enough because it's such a tiny little thing. All right, back to the phones. Mike in Chapel Hill, thanks for calling. Can you turn that down in the background there, Mike?
So, yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you, sir. Hey, thank you, sir. This is Mike. I'm calling from Carolina. How are you doing?
Doing fine, thanks.
Sorry about that. I'm about to run out of gas. I'm looking for a place to go. I was curious about something. I'm reading your book, and it's great. What Jewish people believe about Jesus.
Okay, sure.
I wanted to find out, do you preach on Sundays? Because I'd like to come and see you if you do.
Well, I do on certain Sundays. I happen to be preaching this Sunday at Fire. I only preach at least once a month. This time it's twice, so I'll be preaching, God willing, this Sunday morning.
This Sunday morning, and it's at Fire Mountain Church, is that right?
No, the mountain is not us. Fire Church. If you just when you get home, just go to fire-church.org. It'll give you the details.
Fire-church.org. Okay, yeah. fire-church.org.
You'll find us.
Okay, fire-church.org. I'm definitely going to come see you because everybody, I've told everybody about you, and everybody's excited about you, all my friends, and we're going to come see you. The question that I had was about a little bit about race relations, and I don't know if they told you. Do you see anywhere in the Bible where somebody, I think there was a guy at Tennessee, Cleveland, Tennessee, Perry Stone, I don't know if you've heard of him?
Sure.
And he said that Moses was actually married to a black woman, a slave. Do you know if that's true or not?
First thing, the Bible doesn't say she was a slave.
Okay.
And I don't know, I can't vouch for what Perry Stone said or didn't say. But
okay.
it does mention explicitly in Numbers, the 12th chapter, that Aaron and Miriam were criticizing him because he was married to a Cushite woman. Now, we know Zipporah was his wife, but it could well be that this was a second wife that he took. There's no evidence that Zipporah would have been black, you know, Middle Eastern. Like Billy Graham once said, Jesus was darker than me, and to a black crowd, lighter than you. You know, he'd be a... But It says this in Numbers 12, Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. And a Cushite is an Ethiopian, so presumably black. So there's without question, there's what you would call African or black blood mingled in among the ancient Israelite people. But that would not be that uncommon for Middle Easterners that came out of Egypt, Egypt being northern Africa. But there's no evidence that she was a slave. We have no hard information for that. But Numbers 12 does say that he married a Cushite wife, so certainly that's a black wife. Was that what they're critical of, or they're critical of another aspect of it? The text doesn't tell us. So there you go.
There you go. Do you have time for one quick question or not?
Yeah, real quick. We got our phone lines jammed, but real quick. Go ahead.
Gotcha. The other question I had is there's a lot of, this is maybe completely different, but there's a lot of talk today about antioxidants, and I'm trying to get a lot of them. Do you study health at all or no?
No, my wife studies it a lot and gives me a lot of input, and my assistant Trent gives me a lot of input, and I work on health but don't study it, so I would not be the one. This is definitely a question where I'm a lot of fire. I can't help you with that. Hey, Mike, if you show up with your friends Sunday, make sure you come over and say hi to us, okay?
And what time is it again, sir?
9:30 in the morning, but all the info is at fire-church.org, okay?
9:30. I'll see you there. Thank you, sir.
All right. You got it. Bye-bye. God bless. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, if you're ever in our area, when I say in our area, the greater Charlotte area, if you've heard of the famous Motor Speedway here, it used to be Lowe's Motor Speedway, now Charlotte Motor Speedway, the big NASCAR, famous NASCAR Speedway here. We are less than a half mile from that, our congregation and our school, but not my hidden office. That's elsewhere. Okay, Keith in Winston-Salem, thanks for calling the Line of Fire today.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Brown. I wanted to ask you a question. I know I'm sure you've probably read the Bible several times through, and that's a desire of mine to do. And my question for you was, would you say the books are laid out in perfect order, or is there a particular way you would read it to where it would flow and make more sense to you?
No, I would read it as we have it in our English translations. Excuse me, which reflects the way the order in the ancient Greek called the Septuagint. The order of the Hebrew goes slightly different, but I would read it just as you have it in virtually all of your English translations, and I don't think it's I think that ultimately, even though some of the books could have gone in different order, basically they've been put together wisely and rightly. You know, the five books of Moses, then the historical books, then the prophetic books, the books of poetry and wisdom, and then the prophetic books. So I would read right through, and then the Gospels and Acts and letters and Revelation in the New Testament. What I do is constantly be trying to read it through cover to cover, but then find passages and subjects that really interest you and spend separate time really digging into those in greater depth. And after reading it through once or twice in one translation, look at some other translations as well. Hey, great question, though, Keith. Thank you. We'll be back. I'm going to add a few more comments to that when we return. God of light, hear our cry. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. My great joy to be with you, Michael Brown. Thanks for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 with your questions. Before I go back to the phones and before I make another comment about the order of the books in the Bible, I really want to urge you strongly to visit our website, AskDrBrown.org, and to take advantage of our special resource offer. Our entire School of Cultural Engagement, 6 weeks of summer classes that were offered last year, if for the level of classes that were taught, let's say you put these at a seminary, you could charge a few hundred bucks for each class, okay? If we charge $50 a class, it would be like giving them away. Well, we have all six classes on MP3s at a reduced price for everything, $75. These are really important classes. They will bless you. John Rankin teaching on Only Genesis, the basis to interpret the Bible and life. Joe Dallas on reclaiming godly sexuality. Yours truly on It's Time to Rock the Boat. Cultural Apologetics by Frank Turek, Separation of Church and State by Alliance Defense Fund Attorney Joe Infranco, and Engaging Culture, Congress, and the Media, Pat Mahoney. Take advantage of these. Get hold of them. Get some extra copies for your friends, for your church. Really important, wonderful classes at a tremendous discount, but available only through our website, askdrbrown.org. Okay, just to be clear, a Jewish person reading the Bible, that person is reading in what we would call the Old Testament. He would call just the Bible or Tanakh. That's the Hebrew acronym. The exact same books that you're reading in your English Bible, the exact same books, just some of them are in a different order, but the exact same books. The order that we have, as I mentioned, the law or the Torah, the five books, followed by the historical books, followed by the poetry and wisdom literature, followed by the prophetic books, is actually a more logical order than in the Hebrew canon, but the same books in both. Now, we know from ancient manuscripts and discussions of canon in the New Testament that there was some difference in the order of books there. As we have it now in our Gospels, once you get after Acts, when you get to letters of Paul, they go pretty much in size order from Romans moving down. They're not in chronological order. And then you have the pastoral letters and then so-called general letters at the end before Revelation. But I have not seen, I know some have argued that if you read it in a different order, it really opens up. My friend Frank Viola, who's a very strong advocate of house church movement, has really argued for that if you read them in a different order and chronologically, it opens things up. I'm all for reading it in all kinds of different orders, but there's certainly absolute wisdom and no problem in reading it as we have it. And then as you get used to that, just remember that the order of books is not as sacred as the books. That's what's sacred. All right, back to the phones. John in Winston-Salem, thanks for calling today.
Hey, how are you today?
Oh, I'm blessed. How about you?
Well, I'm blessed too, and I wanted to publicly say that I feel blessed by the Lord of Eternity that I've spent my life studying these ancient languages that you were talking about.
And, wonderful.
I began with Koine Greek, and when I think back, I'm amazed at what God did because I was such a little fool. They talked about this thing called Classical Greek. And boy, he said, you know, if you could just do this Classical Greek, that'd really be something. Well, I was just stupid enough to go ahead and try to do that. And I studied Classical Greek and, of course, Classical Latin. And I studied Hebrew for a year, and then I was busy with other things. But I've been able to come back to it and basically teach it to myself over the years. Sitting in my classroom where I teach Latin, when the students were busy, I would be studying Weingren's old Hebrew grammar.
Yeah, Jacob Weingren, sure.
And that was a very difficult grammar, and I wouldn't recommend it for anybody right now. I think there's probably better things, but what you were saying about it is it's absolutely true. If you do it, if you study these languages on a regular basis, you're going to come to a point where the exponential curve kicks in.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it will become easier for you. I don't know if that's been your experience, but I hit the exponential curve in Greek, and then I hit it in Latin. I'm still working on it in Hebrew, but basically, it's a point at which your mind just does it.
Right. You start thinking. You get it. You basically get it. But it,
and what a blessing it is.
It is a blessing, but
it's folks, a blessing to sit down with the Greek text because. You know, a lot of people struggle over what translation to buy and read, and I never worry. I can read any of them because if push comes to shove and I'm uncertain, I can always go back to the original.
Yeah, the good thing is John, I think people need to realize we're talking about years of hard work, but it pays off. And for those that aren't called to or don't have the ability to do the study, there's some real good resources that we put on the website, answering some Hebrew questions and then some software. But bless you, John. Keep up the good work, and may the exponential curve come in your Hebrew study.
Send the fire today.
Time goes flying by. I hope you're using your time wisely in your own lives, friends. It says in Ephesians 5, that we should be redeeming the time, making the most of every opportunity. Psalm 20, the psalmist prays, attributed to Moses, prays that God would teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Okay, I'm going to get to a couple more questions before we're done here today on the Line of Fire. Number one, Steve asks, let's see here, I've been giving to the missionaries, that my church supports, and now a book by Dr. K.P. Yohanan with the Gospel for Asia group has fallen into my hands by a friend who won it from the radio. I'm thinking of supporting Gospel for Asia because I feel like I'm being led by the Spirit too, so I'm just wondering if you know about this group and could share any info, whether it be good or bad. Oh, Steve, yeah, I know K.P. personally. I have friends that are close with him, and they are doing it. Gospel Asia is a great place to invest funds, a great place to send money to get the work done in Asia. And for everybody else that is listening, my dear friend in India, Yesu Padam, that I work with, we've gone there now 16 out of the last 17 years. There are people that we have laid hands on and sent out together to plant churches who have been beaten for the gospel. One of the men we sent out to plant a church was killed last year, a married man with two children, beaten to death and his body burned by Hindu radicals. These are folks doing it on the front lines. And they just revamped their website. I'm going to have Yesu Padam on as soon as possible. He's got an extraordinary testimony, and it's been a couple of years since I've had him on. But I'm just looking at their website now, Love and Care Ministries. I believe it is lncministries.org. There it is, newly revised. You can support their ministry right online. They have children that you can support, children in their children's school, orphans. These kids start every day praying for like 4 to 5 in the morning, often praying with tears for the lost. There are pastors for, 50, 60 bucks a month, maybe that much. You can support them full-time and their families. That's right, full-time and their families planting churches, living more sacrificially in a day than we will in 10 years. They're ministries that are worthy of support. And we have our fire missionaries all around the world. If you wonder the fruit of fire, there are people that have been through our school that have been raised up and sent out that are bearing fruit for Jesus all around the world. You can find out about that if you go to fire-international.org. There are plenty of ministries, plenty of missionaries that really need support. Excuse me, folks that are going for it. And I, for one, am not giving to some ministries so that God can buy a newer and better personal jet. I fly a lot. I go around the world. We can rough it on an airplane. And most of us that fly enough with upgrades and miles and different things, you can even fly more comfortably. You can fly business class and first class. Sometimes it doesn't cost you a dime. I'm not going to pay for a first class international ticket, but you can get upgraded. We fellow ministers, we can rough it and fly with everybody else, even if we get stuck in the back of the plane. We can rough it. I think we can handle that. So I'm not giving to somebody to get a new jet, but by all means, I'm pouring money into our missionaries around the world, and I'd encourage you to give to those bearing fruit around the world. So Steve, yes, KP's got a great ministry. Folks, go to lncministries.org, check out fire-international.org, and sow into those laboring around the world. And how about sowing into those around you that don't know Jesus by sharing your life, sharing your testimony, sharing your help and love, and being an ambassador for the kingdom right where you live. Have an awesome weekend. Go after Jesus. May he be glorified in each of you.